informative radio for the Sunshine State.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
Meet Jean-Claude Killy.
To me, Camaro SS is a great foreign sports car.
And you can choose from all the Chevrolet Super Sports cars. Together now, in one place. The Sports Shop at your Chevrolet dealer's sports department.
Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Again?
Button up my sleeve. Presto! No doubt about it. I gotta get another hat.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Hey, so I'm Dennis Gage from and that's Stacey David. Just like
Dennis, Sonic, hurry! Would you hurry, Dennis?
Sonic bombing this. I'm Dennis Gage from My Classic Car, and you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
No, you're listening to Nostalgic Radio
that's
and Cars.
That's what I said.
Yes,
I said Nostalgic.
Nostalgic
Radio and Cars.
You know,
Stacey. I don't know what to do. You can dress him up, but you can't take him out. You know what I mean?
Why not, man? You're paying this time.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computer and Google Tantalk1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you miss any of our past shows, 710 plus one or two, something like that, don't forget to check out NostalgicRadioandCars.com, and you can listen to all our 710, 11, 12, something like that, shows. Hey, you know what? We're a couple days away, less than a week away from our 14th anniversary. So we've got a little anniversary show special planned for you. And but I'm not going to surprise you just yet. I'm going to have you wait until our anniversary show, which is next week on Tuesday the 14th. And it was actually on Thursday the 13th of May, 2010, when we first hit the airwaves, as they say. Well, it's been a very busy couple of months. I've attended quite a few car shows. There's a lot of small ones, but let's see. Let me recap here some of the big ones. You know what? I forgot half the stuff I went to because my memory's, you know, I'm getting to be old, so my memory's short. But anyway, but thankfully, I have posted most of this stuff on my Facebook page. So if you want to go to Nostalgic Radio and Cars Facebook page, we can recap some of the stuff. So basically in March, beginning of March, we had the Works Reunion, which was in Amelia Island. And then that evening, I scurried down to Miami to go to the Moda Miami show, first year, the inaugural event. That was a lot of fun. That was pretty interesting. And some interesting pictures. A lot of really cool cars there. Shelby's, Boss's, Lamborghini 350 GT. That is where I actually got a chance to sit into the GT GT Bang Bang car, which is a feature car, one of the feature cars at the Stahl Foundation Automobile Museum up in Detroit. The James Bond Aston Martin that was used in the, I think, Skyfall or one of those movies. That was there. I got a chance to sit in that. Pretty cool. Just a lot of really neat cars. A few weeks after that, we had the St. Pete Grand Prix. Went down there for that, and I think they had Brett Michaels was one of the headliners at the for the entertainment that they had that evening, the band. And then the next day I was kind of wandering around in the pit area, and I ran into the captain, Roger Penske, and Mr. Chip Ganassi. And both those gentlemen were there, plus the former mayor of Indianapolis, and he was there, Mr. Daniels, Ron Daniels. So if you go to our Facebook page, there's a picture of all four of us standing there. That was kind of cool, kind of interesting. Of course, I'm kind of rehashing kind of like a few things here in the last couple of months. One of the ladies that we had on the show, which is she was a member of the Florida Central Region SCCA, and we had Sammy Ronhausen on our show. So we talked a little bit about SCCA. That was kind of cool. A couple weeks after that, what did we do? We went to, I went to Alabama. And I had to go up there to do an appraisal up with our friends up there at Barber Motorsports Museum. And coincidentally, it happened to be the 60th anniversary of the Mustang. And that event was going on. So I was able to just stay an extra day or two and go check out all the Mustangs. That was kind of cool. And there was a couple cars there that kind of caught my attention. One in particular was a 66 Shelby Hertz car, Hertz Rent-A-Racer, that was basically the original owner who acquired that car. When Hertz turned the cars into Ford Motor Company then took the cars, cleaned them, detailed them, and then put them on the market for sale. So depending on where the car was, you know, which Hertz dealership it was, usually, let's say, for example, the Atlanta area, you know, the cars kind of stayed around the Atlanta area. But what would happen is a lot of these cars would go on auction. Let's just say, Mannheim, for example. And if a dealer happened to be there and it was a Ford sale, direct Ford sale, which means only Ford dealers can buy from there, they generally pick up those kind of cool cars. That goes on these days, too. And then what happens is if they don't sell all the cars to all the dealers, then a lot of those cars become what they call reruns, and then they become available to independent car dealers like myself. But anyway, this gentleman and his wife had this original 66 Hertz car. And I believe, as the story goes, it was driven until sometime in the 80s, and then they parked it, and it just sat in a barn. Well, years and years and years and years and years later, they decided to retrieve the car, clean it up just a little bit, just enough to make it run and drive, and they've since been showcasing the car. So it was one of the featured cars there. In fact, what they did is it was so covered with dust, you know, typically from sitting around in a barn, that they just kind of wiped the window a little bit so they could see out of it, and that was about it. And then they drive it, you know, in and out of a parking lot, and then for the most part, it just gets trailered, and it's predominantly a display vehicle. That was kind of cool. And there was a small swap meet there and a lot of late model Mustangs, but there was also some track racing going on. So, you know, our friends from Cobra Automotive, you know, Kurt and those guys were up there playing around, and some other people that I know. A couple of weeks after that, or a week or so after that, I went to the American Muscle Car Museum over in Melbourne. We had Mark Piloch on our show. He is the founder of the American Muscle Car Museum. And that museum actually holds the distinction of having the largest collection of Ford GTs probably in the United States, maybe even the planet for all we know. And I think there's like 17 or 18 cars, just shy of 20 perhaps, all extremely low mileage cars in assorted colors. And so that's kind of, he's kind of a passionate Ford guy, but there's Shelby's, there's Bosses, there's Mopars, there's Porsches, there's, you know what I didn't see in there? I didn't see any Ferraris, come to think of it. Might have been one there hidden away. Even had a Yanko Vega, which was kind of interesting. Yanko Nova, a couple of Yanko Camaros. Might have been a Nikki car in there, but I don't remember. Number of Shelby's, Bosses, Superbirds, Super Bees, of course. Dodge Daytona Charger, I think it was one in there. Just an amazing collection. What Mr. Piloch does is probably in the springtime up until about May or so, the end of May, and then resuming again in, I'm going to say, the end of September, he has gatherings there. So he'll have a Cars and Coffee. He'll have a, let's say, an all-British car show, which is what I attended. Actually, it was British and European, so there was a good mix of cars, you know, English cars and other European cars. So there would have been Porsches, Mercedes-Benzes, you know, BMWs and things like that, Volkswagens, as well as Jaguars, Heelys, an unusual car, Jensen, an Aston Martin, plenty of MGBs, Triumphs, and Morgans, and all those cool little British cars. May have been in Riley there, too, as well. I'm not sure. Anyway, that was a pretty interesting event. I enjoyed that. A lot of cool cars, so definitely check out our Facebook page because we got some stuff on there. Then about a week or two later after that, there was another event taking place in St. Augustine, Florida, and that was the Riding in the History motorcycle show. And which was also kind of combined with some cars, but predominantly motorcycles. And this gentleman also has a museum in there. So when I rolled around inside his museum after talking to some of the people outside, looking at some of the vintage motorcycles, vintage Japanese motorcycles are getting extremely popular. And naturally, they had a great presence there. You know, usual Yamahas and Hondas and Kawasaki's and Suzuki's and probably some Japanese motorcycles that I'm not even familiar with were there, some obscure bikes. Obviously, the British bikes were there, you know, Norton's, BSA's, AJ's, stuff like that. There's one that I can't, the tip of my tongue right now. Actually has sound kind of an Italian name, but it's actually an English bike. And it'll come to me here in a second. Speaking of Italian bikes, there was obviously Laviadas, there was Moto Guzzis, and Aprilas, and Ducatis. There was a good selection of those. German bikes, there was a couple Sundaps there, Makos, you know, probably remember those. I did see, I believe, one Puch, which is an Austrian bike, a Sachs, which is also kind of Austrian. And so there was just an amazing collection of bikes, and vintage, you know, from the turn of the century, you know, like, oh, Harley-Davidson, of course, Harleys, and Indians, and racing bikes. There was just a good mix, and some interesting people. And that's kind of what makes these whole shows kind of really a lot of fun, because, you know, you meet some interesting people that are there, bike collectors, car collectors, boat collectors, you know, car collectors, vehicle, motorized collectors in general, pretty much, you know, they're kind of cool. Anyway, so I went inside the museum, and yes, there was a replica of a Cobra. There was a number of Mustangs, you know, early cars. There was a number of Corvettes, and every car collection has, if they have a Corvette, they've got a 63 split window in there, which is probably the most popular Corvette. Probably, you know, big block 67 is probably in there, a 5, 6, or 7. Usually 6 and 7 to 427 cars, sometimes a 69, 68, 69, 427 car, sometimes a 70, 71, 454 car. Occasionally you might find an LT1 in there, you never know. Some Chryslers, he had a couple of interesting cars in there. He had 166 Plymouth Fury 3 convertible, you don't see those very often. A 68, I'm going to say it could have been a real... Super B 69, 68 convertible, but it could have been a Coronet with all the goodies on it, with some Super B trim on it, or let's see, I'm trying to think what they call that, Coronet something else. Let's see, what else did they have there? Four Trans Ams, not one, not two, not three, but four, including a Brewster Green Trans Am, which is one of my favorites, like they use in the movie Mac Q. That was a lot of fun. And so definitely put those two museums on your list, the American Muscle Car Museum in Melbourne, and then the St. Augustine Classic Car Museum in St. Augustine, which is also pretty cool. Now, the Melbourne Museum has 400 cars. That's a lot of cars, really amazing cars. You could eat off the floor. And, you know, I'm not surprised, because the gentleman that owns the facility comes from the pharmaceutical industry, so naturally everything's going to be clean. I think I even said that once before. And then, but the museum up there in St. Augustine has about 100 cars, and, you know, he rotates them. And he also has some cars for sale in there from time to time, so it's definitely worth the trip. And St. Augustine is kind of cute. It's historic. It's kind of neat. There's a lot of neat things to do up in St. Augustine. The week after that, or a couple weeks after that, there were some intermittent car shows. I think I went to Inverness, to the car show, which they do every third Friday of the month. I went to that. And then I think a week or so after that, I was up in Atlanta. And when I went to Atlanta, they had the vintage motor races, the Walter Mitty, which is the vintage road races, or the vintage HSR, Historic Sports Car Racing, classic vintage road racing event. And that was a lot of fun. There was some real action going on, some real race cars on a real racetrack. So, but before I got to that, I was diddy-bopping down the side roads. I was always going, which I always do, is, you know, wandering around looking for cool stuff. And I got passed by a Porsche, and then I had a Porsche coming towards me. So I thought, well, I wonder where these cars are headed, because they're not going to the Road Atlanta. They're stopping up for this other little truck. Now, across the street, kitty corner, before you get to Road Atlanta, is Lanier Racetrack. And I believe it was started by a guy by the name of Randy Lanier way back in the day. A well-known race car driver, which is a story for another day. But anyway, so it's kind of like an oval, okay? And of course, he was into NASCAR racing, you know, short track racing. So they happened to have a Porsche event going on there, which was Smokies GTs, I believe is the name of the organization. And so what they did is actually rented that car, and it's only for people that own GT Porsches. So whether you have a GT 911, a GT3 911, a GT2 911, a GT2 RS, a Cayman GT, a 914 GT, a 356 GT, because technically that's considered a GT as well. So it says all GTs, all Porsche GTs. Anyway, so they actually had some track time up there, which was kind of interesting. And they set it up kind of like a infield road course. Can't go too fast, you know, maybe out of second gear, third maybe on the straightaway. And then you got to get on the binders pretty hard because you got a couple of turns coming at you. And you really don't want to kiss the wall in your $250,000, $300,000 Porsche GT2 or GT3. Anyway, so that was going on. So then I diddy-bop up the road about another half a mile or so, or three-quarters of a mile, and then I was at Road Atlanta. And so that was a lot of fun. So obviously when I got there, I was roaming around the infield saying hi to a few people. And one of the first batch of cars that went out were the vintage NASCARs. And the vintage I mean, some of these cars are 25, 30, 40 years old. There was a Bill Elliott car there out of the 80s, for example, Thunderbird. And then there was a couple of early 80s, you know, the box GM cars like the Novas, I mean, the Monte Carlos and the Pontiacs and the Buicks. They had a couple of those out there. And then most of the other cars were 90s or some 90s cars. And then most of them were, you know, mid-2000s and late-2000s. And that's kind of like, where do you go with an X-race car? You know, the only place to go with an X-race car, because it's not competitive anymore, is into vintage racing. So you either have HSR, which is Historic Sports Car Racing, or you have SVRA, which is Sports Vintage Racing Association. And Sports Vintage, I'm kind of thinking that, I know HSR started in Florida, because Joe Pendergast started that, and it was actually a spinoff of SVRA. And what it boiled down to is, at the time, an SVRA car had to be a real live former racing car with logbooks prior to 1972, and it had to be documented. So, since a lot of people had cars that were late 70s and early 80s, they needed to find an organization in which those cars could compete on a vintage racing level, and hence HSR was formulated. So. But some of these cars have attained some crazy values, so you won't see a lot of the original ones running around on the racetrack, but you will see a fair amount of replicas where the real ones are possibly in a private collection or maybe in a museum, or the gentleman that has the real one doesn't want to race the real one, so he has a replica built of his car. Now, when you go out to Laguna Seca, which is generally in August, you will see a real live, you know, Cobra ran out there, a real live Ferrari GTO, a real live Daytona Cobra out there, and countless real live Ferraris and Maserati bird cages, and some very, very interesting Porsches with real live history, as in 917s and things of that nature, 904, 906s, 910s, and on and on and on. So there's definitely a place for those cars to go. And they're careful with it. It's gentleman racing. If you're not careful, you will be kicked off the track and blackballed for a while. But nonetheless, vintage racing is huge. Okay. So that was Road Atlanta. And if you go to our Facebook page, I've got some pictures of some guys blasting around the track a little bit, so you can kind of get a feel for it. I also did the same thing at the Mustang show in Alabama there at Barber Motorsports. I may not have posted the racing, but I definitely did some there, and I'll probably put them on one of the Facebook pages eventually. Anyway, and then, of course, this past weekend, we had Festivals of Speed at the World Equestrian Center, where yours truly was a judge and helping out there. And it was kind of fun because, you know, you get to meet a lot of people, get to see a lot of good cars. It's a good variety of cars. It's not a concourse. It's just that there's some really nice cars show up there, some vintage cars and some supercars. There was a fair amount of Lamborghinis and Ferraris and vintage, when I say vintage Lamborghinis, you know, we're talking 80s, you know, like a Diablo or something like that, a couple of Countaches, and obviously the fair share of Huracans and Murcielagos and Aventadors and things like that. In fact, there was one car there, it was a Murcielago, and for the life of me, I couldn't remember what it was. I didn't have to judge it because I was judging European cars, and short of Italian, okay, just all European cars. And so there was a group of guys judging Ferraris and Lamborghinis. And so then finally it occurred to me what it was. I actually had to Google it. That's pretty bad. But anyway, and there was a fair share of vintage Porsches, a couple 356s, Speedster, 57A there. All cars that I knew before, friends of mine from the club. Vintage Rolls Royces, vintage Bentleys. An Aston Martin. It was a late model Aston Martin, but it was a James Bond 007 edition. That was kind of cool. I took a number of pictures of that. Countless Corvettes, because they're everywhere. Volkswagens, lots of Volkswagen, dune buggies, and some unusual car. There was actually one car that was kind of interesting. What it was a M3 BMW that a tuning company, and I forget how many they made, maybe 15 or 20 of them, and they put a 10-cylinder in them. So we actually gave him an award for that because it was something Autobahn, and I couldn't think of anything more fitting than that particular car, you know, a little lightweight M3 series BMW running around on the Autobahn with a 10-cylinder motor in it, which is an M5 engine by today's standards. That's pretty powerful. It's pretty potent. I think that may be the same motor they use in a Pagani. Pagani either uses BMW or Mercedes, one of the two. I can't remember. But a lot of interesting cars. Anyway, on that note, what I'm going to do is, encourage you obviously to go to Facebook page and check out our stuff. And don't forget to like and share. Okay, that's very, very important. But on that note, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a break here for a second. I'm going to play a little music. In fact, I think I'm going to play one of my all-time favorites. This song came out in, 1973. And it was by Bachman Turner Overdrive, and it's called Blue Collar. So don't touch that dial. Like I said, we'll be right back.
Walk your street, and I'll walk mine. And should we meet, would you spare me some time? 'Cause you should see my world and meet my kind before you judge our mind. Blue collar. Your sleep, I'm awake and alive. I keep late hours, you're a 9-to-5. So I would like you to know I need the quiet hours to create this world of mine.
Okay, we're back, and you're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. And, I guess you got me for the evening. And then, of course, we have our anniversary show next week. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk about, besides, you know, some of the stuff that I was doing on, the last couple of months here, you know, going to some of these weekend events, and some of them are just one day, some of them are 2 days, some of them are 3 or 4 days, and which brings up driving tours. Now, as you all know, I work part-time for a company called, I do some PR, I should say, for a company called Fastlane Travel. Fastlane Travel does driving tours to Europe, predominantly to the Porsche factory. Now, I went on the first driving tour in 1980, and then I went back again in 1981. Now, back then, it was really cool because we went to the Porsche factory, and we went to the old factory, which was Works 1, which is where they actually built 356s later. They built them initially in Gemünd, Austria, and then they ended up setting up headquarters in Stuttgart, which is where Mercedes is as well. And then they have across the street is Works 2, which back then in the 80s and 70s and prior to that was where a lot of the race cars were basically put together and assembled. So that was pretty cool. And Europe back then was much, how should I put it? I don't know. It was very more, listen to me, I can't even talk right. It was more traditional, you know, it's still kind of like old school. I mean, I lived over there back in the 60s and the 70s, and I went to school over there, so, you know, it was still old school Europe, in my opinion, you know, and very traditional and very clean, I might add, you know. And so we went to the Porsche factory, and it works one, it was really interesting because you're actually kind of like walking down the assembly line, the original part where the cars were built. And then, of course, right next to it, contiguous to it, was the new factory where the new cars were being built. And it was quasi, I'm not going to say it was robotics. They didn't have robotics when I was there in 80 and 81, but they did have assembly lines, and there was a few things that, you know, came down the assembly line that helped the assembly guys, you know, put the cars back together. And of course, one of the questions was, or one of the comments that I made back then, is I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, we got these guys assembling his cars, and they're just, as the cars are rolling down the assembly line, they're grabbing the front suspension, the rear suspension, you know, the motor and whatnot, all this kind of stuff. And they're just kind of hanging the stuff with, you know, with their air guns, bzz, 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 you know, throwing the front suspension in, rear suspension, the motor, and like I said before. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, these guys, I'm not sure they realize that, you know, some of us go out there, you know, pushing 150, 160, 170, whatever those cars will do back in the day. And because, you know, maximum horsepower out of the box was probably, in on the Euro cars, was 250 to 300, right? Depending on whether you had a 911 or 928 or 944 or 944 turbo or whatever. 44 turbo hadn't even come out yet, but they did have a 924 Carrera GT. And so at any rate, so we got to see all that. And the cool part was is then afterwards we ate in what they call the cantina, which is, the big giant cafeteria. And what was really neat is because I became really good friends with Peter Sontag, who is the founder of Fastlane Travel, I kind of got to sit at the head of the table with him and the founder of Porsche, Ferry Porsche himself. And that was really cool. And fortunately, because I spoke German, I could kind of communicate with him. He's actually a fairly quiet guy. You know, a lot of engineers are like that. They're not real talkative kind of guys. And not like us radio show guys that just blah, 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 blah. But at any rate, so it was kind of interesting. So we sat there and we had some discussions. We talked a little bit about it. And, you know, you know how time goes by and you say, damn, you look back and I go, wow, here I had this amazing opportunity, and I should have asked more questions. Now, had I been in radio back then, had I been more of a talkative kind of person back then, I probably would have said something, but I wasn't sure because I was kind of like a guest, and I didn't really want to impose. In retrospect, I should have just carried on a conversation because you never know where it would have gone, and that's kind of the way it is. When you go to these car shows, you meet all these interesting people. It's like over the weekend when I was – where was I? At Festival of Speed. I met a couple interesting guys there, you know. And you just start talking, and that's the thing about the car hobby, you know. You don't know what these guys, their hobbies and their interests are. We have a gentleman coming on here, I don't know, probably in the next couple of weeks or something like that. I met him at the vintage races because he had this really cool MGB GT with this wild little 315, well, the Rover 3500 V8 engine in it, which was basically the foundation of that motor, was the Buick 315 or 215, excuse me, and then 300. That was aluminum block, little itty-bitty little wedge, like a little small little nail head motor, right? And so the guy was English, and next thing you know, we started talking a little bit, and told me about how he was in the Olympics in 1980 and how he was in the Olympics, the sailing group, okay? So that's an interesting story, but I'm not going to spoil it for you right now. I'm going to wait till he comes on the show, and I'm going to let him tell you about it. And one thing led to another, and again, it's passion that drives a lot of people into their hobby. And one of the things that he brought up was he starts naming off of some of the well-known race car drivers that are actually, in besides racing cars, they're into sailing, which is interesting. No different than you have some racing car guys that are into horses, or they're into motorcycles, or they're into golf, for all we know. Okay, so, you know, everybody's got more than one hobby. And but, you know, a lot of car guys, you know, they're car guys passionately, and then they have other little hobbies that they do that kind of, you know, break the monotony, so to speak. And then you have the dedicated car guy that just says, look, I'm going to race a go-kart this week. I'm going to race a Formula One car next week. I'm going to race an Indy car the week after that. I'm going to race a short track car after that. I'm going to race a drag car after that. I'm going to race a road race car after that. And I'm going to speed down the highway after that. Kind of like that, I guess. Anyway, so when I was in Germany, and then across the street, we were at Works One, and then we were sitting there at dinner or at lunchtime there with Ferry Porsche and a couple of the other executives. Now, this is 1980, okay? And we went across the street, and it was the Works Two building, which is where they had some of the race cars, and it was also the well-known Goody store. And that's where you could get, you know, you could order just about anything you wanted. I mean, I ordered a few little knickknacks, some emblems, and a few things like that. But, I mean, if I wanted to order, you know, 911 3-liter RSR motor, I could have ordered that as well, or I could have ordered a race car, whatever I wanted at the time, because they would sell it to privateers. Basically, if you had a big fat checkbook, you could buy what you want. No different than if you went to Ford Motor Company and you were really well connected, you could do the same thing. Same thing at General Motors, same thing at Chrysler. You know, if a Ferrari guy, I could roll up to the Ferrari dealership or the Lamborghini dealership, or factory rather, and I could order whatever I want. That's just kind of the way it was back in those days, a la carte. It's pretty much that way today too, still. Okay. You know, they're kind of like cars built to sample. In fact, there's a guy in Orlando that is an avid Ferrari collector, and he wanted a custom-built special one-off Ferrari, and I can't remember which name, which model it's after. It escapes me, but I know that it was yellow. And he basically had the car built, and it was Dr. So-and-so's Ferrari. I'll just make up a number, F something or other, something or other, okay? And, you know, if you've got endless funds, you can do that. That's kind of how it works. And the European car companies are very much like that. The American car companies, maybe. I think if you know somebody way up top, you can probably pull a few strings. But anyway, so the beauty of that was is that at the time, again, you never, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. You look back and you go, wow, you know, here I was. I was at the factory, the old original factory, and I was at Works 1 and Works 2. And then also in addition to that was the museum, which was right down the street. And the interesting thing about the museum was that it was this old building, and there might have been 15 cars at best in there, old racing cars, you know, 904s, 906s, 908s, 910s, 917s, 356, RSKs, 550 Spiders. There may have been a Camaro coupe in there. There are just some really interesting cars, stuff you just don't see. And that was pretty cool, you know. And then, of course, we went with the group, and we at that time, it wasn't really a driving tour. It was a bus tour. Okay, so then we went to a really nice hotel, which we stayed into, which was the Hotel Graf Zeppelin, which is in downtown Stuttgart. And then behind Stuttgart, or behind Hotel Graf Zeppelin, is a pedestrian zone with an amazing area to go shopping if you're into shopping. But they had some amazing restaurants and, you know, some parks that were down around the corner, and, you know, a museum or two and things like that, you know, outside, you know, art museums rather than that automotive. And just things for people to do, you know, because it's Stuttgart. It's very historic. And then the Mercedes-Benz factory wasn't too far away. So we actually went over to the Mercedes-Benz factory, and or not the factory, but the museum, and checked out some cars there as well. And then we got on our bus, and we went to, which was probably the highlight, which you can't do any longer, which was Weissach. Weissach is the Porsche R&D Research and Development Center. That's where all the trick stuff goes on. Now, what people don't realize, they have a test track there as well. But what people don't realize is that Porsche is not only an automobile manufacturer, but it is literally a research and development center. So they are contracted by outside companies to do R&D, because you know how the Germans are. They're extremely meticulous and extremely well-organized and extremely advanced. They basically do a lot of interesting research and development, and it may be for other manufacturers, it may be appliance companies, it may be automotive, it may be motorcycle, it may even be the military, it may be, you know, anything's possible, okay? And a lot of it's proprietary, and it's not disclosed. But while we were there, we got to see anything that was related to the Porsche. And I thought what was interesting is they had all the cars there. There was like 9 or 10 911s there, and they had four dynamometers, or, you know, the things to put your car on and check for horsepower, if I pronounce it right. And these were going on, and they were checking the horsepower. And back then in Europe, the European cars had more horsepower than the U.S. car. So, for example, a 911 back in the day probably had 205 horsepower if it was a U.S. car, and probably had 240 if it was a European car. And a lot of it has to do with camshafts and fuel distributors and things of that nature. And this is back when they had the 3-liter engine. And so we got to go and actually get to tour the whole facility. And it was really cool because it was the first time I'd ever been in a sound room. It was the first time I'd ever been, you know, in a room where they actually, you know, where the cars were weighted down. It was where you could watch them assemble the motors. It was where you could watch them test certain components, you know, stress-wise. There was just some interesting things going on there. And then, of course, the highlight was being able to ride on a test track. And so what you did is you drew straws, and you got to ride in a 911 or a 930. And if you're really, really lucky, you got to ride in the Safari car, which was their off-road vehicle at the time, or the 935. Luckily, I got to ride in a 930 and a 935, so I was okay. I was happy with that. Okay, so the following year, I get invited back because I speak German. So Peter invited me to be an assistant tour guide. And so it was pretty much the same, only this time the new president and CEO of Porsche was Peter Schütz, and he was American, and he had worked for, I think, either John Deere, Caterpillar, or somebody like that in the United States, and then he got recruited, and he was working for a German truck manufacturer, and it was either Deutz or Mann, M-A-N-N, and I don't remember. But anyway, so then he wound up being the president of Porsche. At the time, Dr. Fuhrmann was the guy that was in charge of development, and Porsche was concerned with the 911 engine that it may or may not meet the up-and-coming emission standards, okay? And so they were experimenting with front engines, and you probably remember the 924 that came out and the 928 came out, which was basically a German muscle car. It was pretty bad. And the 911 was about to become extinct. But Peter Schütz came in there being an American and liking Porsches and understanding the American market. And since the American market is the largest market for Porsches of in terms of ownership, he said, you know what, we have to do something to preserve this motor. So they basically redesigned the 911 3-liter, and they changed it around, changed the injection, changed the emissions on it, and they came up with the 3.2-liter, and which went into production in Europe in 1983 and became available in the United States in 1984, and then they were off and running again, and the 911 was basically saved. And he also basically I'm not going to say reinstituted, but basically they brought the Cabriolet back, okay, because it hadn't been a convertible Porsche since 1965, because when they came out with and that was the 356, when they came out with 911s, they were Targas and coupes with sunroofs. And then that was from 1964, 65, I think the first Targa was might have been 67, if I remember correctly. And then so from 67 to 80, well, all the way to 89, they were Targas. And then, but they brought the Cabriolet out back in 81 in Europe, 82, 81, 82, and then 83 in the United States, and then 84, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and all and cabs ever since. And then, of course, here they brought the Targa back again. They discontinued it when they came out with the 964. No, actually, they had a 964 Targa. When they came out with the 993, they discontinued the traditional Targa, but they had a Targa where the top actually raised up, slid back. You know, they had a whole bunch of limit switches and stuff like that, which to me, down the road, you know, a lot of these cars are getting sophisticated. When these cars are out of warranty and something doesn't work right, you know, and it's hydraulic or electric and whatever, could be a potential problem. Could be a potential problem because it could just go snap and then cock in there and then all kinds of weird stuff will happen. I had a problem with that with a Cabriolet one time. You can get a Porsche 911 with a manual top, or you can get with electric top. Actually, from 87 up, they were standard with manual tops, but 83, 4, 5, they were manual. 86, I think you get optional electric. 87, you could get, it was optional again. I think 88, 89, it was standard. But anyway, that's going from recall, from recollection. Nonetheless, so in 82, or 81 when I was over there, same thing. We went to Weissach. Again, I got to ride in a 935. I know that time I did ride in a 935. The first time I rode in a 930 and a 911. That's what it was. And but I wanted to ride in a safari car the first time, but I didn't get a chance to do that, which would have been kind of cool. Anyway, so it was exactly the same. But the works, but we didn't go to Works 2. We the Goody store was now, Works 2 was, we did go to Works 2, but it was kind of like they were phasing it out. And they were moving it to the new location. But in the meantime, the Goody store was moved to the new location outside of Zuffenhausen, I think is what it was, which is outside of Stuttgart. And so we were there, and then we had another tour and some other really neat stuff going on, Porsche-related, as far as gatherings and things of that nature. So anyway, where I'm going with this whole thing is, so now Fastlane Travel does driving tours where you go to Germany, you rent a Porsche through Porsche Drive, and you stay with the group, and there might be 15 or 20 people in the group, 15 or 20 cars, I should say. So that's, you know, 30 to 40 people, 50 people sometimes in some cases, and you're driving all over Germany, you're driving all over Austria, driving all over Italy, and places like that, and Switzerland, and it's pretty cool. Now, where I'm going with this is the European driving tours is one thing, but what's happening here in the United States is driving tours are huge in the United States. Now, our friends over there and on the other coast there, Grassroots Motorsports, they do one. My friend Troy does one, Legendary Motorsport, or Legendary Auto Autosports. He does one. And then I have another friend of mine that does one in the Carolinas. And Carolinas, like I said, I was just up there. And even though I was just diddy-bopping down the back roads by myself, I was saying to myself, this is really kind of cool because, or kind of cool, but it could be cooler if I had a bunch of guys going with me. Now, there's the Carolinas, North Georgia. When you get outside of Atlanta and you get up around Dawsonville and you get up around Dahlonega and Cleveland and into the Carolinas and up around Blairsville and Young Harris and over towards the Rattler and the Dragon. I should know that because I'm looking at a little sign from the Dragon. There's a lot of fun. Now, the Dragon actually is, you have to do that if you've never done it once, and it's a really cool windy road. But the problem is it's so popular that you can't go really quick on it. You just kind of, you know, never fails. There's always some traffic in your way. Somebody on a motorcycle or somebody going real slow, and you're out there trying to, you know, wing it. But the roads leading up to the Dragon or the Rattler or some of these other side roads, they are a blast. You just have to make sure that, you know, you're not going to go blowing past Johnny Law. You know, that's the only thing you got to watch out for. So you can kind of go fast, but you kind of have to use a little discipline. You can't go crazy. I know when I was up there a couple of years ago, I was with they broke us up in groups, and I went with the faster group, obviously, and I was driving a 911. And I had an older 911. That was just pretty much stock, an 85 I was driving at the time. And the other guy that I was running against, he had a built 3-something liter, probably a 350 horsepower motor. And his 911, there was an 88 that was probably the same horsepower as mine, maybe a little bit more, you know, maybe 20 horsepower more or something like that. And then there was a couple of really fast cars in there. There was a GT2, or GT3 rather. And we actually had a Corvette hanging out, a C4 Corvette. And the poor guy, he could stay with us in the straightaways and just, you know, and actually hang in there with the turns. But his brakes gave out. He had too much brake fade. They didn't have enough brakes on that car because the roads are really windy and you're on the gas, off the gas, on the gas, off the gas, on the brake, off the brake, on the brake, off the brake. You know, and you're just whipping around the turns. You're having a great time. I mean, you're into it. You know, you don't even think about anything else. You're not even cognizant of really what's around you. You're just worried on the car in front of you, worry what's around you. Make sure you don't hit anything or you don't run off the road. Because we do run off the road up there, you're going to go down a ditch and roll around for a while and probably wind up with a bunch of trees and limbs through your car. Or you might even end up in a lake because there's a lot of little lakes and rivers and creeks and stuff like that up there. But where I'm going with this is that, again, I say that a lot, where I'm going with this. There's driving tours are a lot of fun, and this one that we may do in the fall is not with our company, but with another company. I'm just going to kind of experiment with it, but it's like a 4-day weekend. You know, sometimes these 5-6-day deals, you can't always get away for a whole week, okay, which are a lot of fun. You stay at a really nice hotel, you eat the finest foods, you see museums, you see car collections, and it's just, and there's this camaraderie, and that's really kind of cool. And these become, you become kind of like family. It's kind of like when I go to some of these car shows, and I'm going to say Monterey is an example, SEMA's an example, Amelia Island. You see the same people. You may not see people for a year, but when you get together and you gather, there's this camaraderie there. It's just a lot of fun. And so this one that my friend went on last year, which we're looking at this year, it was an all Porsche event, and they have them for different cars. They have them for all Ferraris. Every car club does it, just about. You know, the BMW car club does it, the Toyota car club does it, the Datsun car club or Nissan, whatever. The Ferrari guys do it, the Lamborghini guys do it, obviously the Porsche guys do it, the Corvette guys do it, and the Mustang guys do it, and even Camaros and Mopars. You know, they all get together and they have driving tours. And it's really interesting because when you're up there, the roads are, there's only so many roads that go wherever. And sooner or later, you cross paths, okay? And I recall when I was up there one time, you know, I'm going down the road, and I'm with the Porsche guys. The next thing I see a bunch of Lamborghinis coming at me, you know, and we're all kind of flashing lights. And, hey, that's really cool. You know, they're going fast. We're going fast. Hopefully, we don't touch each other. But, you know, that's kind of the way it is. Or I was going down another road, and then the next thing I saw a bunch of Vipers going by. So there's a Viper club up there. Then I saw a Camaro club, then a Mustang club. And you kind of pass each other. Sometimes you're even on the same road. Sometimes you're even at the same parking lot eating at the same restaurant. It's a lot of fun. It really is. And I'm going to shout out to Randy Hagwood. Randy's thinking about putting together, you know, a group, a car club in St. Pete that actually does driving tours. So that'd be kind of cool if Randy, I probably should have got him on the radio show tonight. And, but anyway, so we were talking about doing that. And, so that's a lot of fun too, you know? So anyway, so this one that we're talking about doing is like a 3-day deal. So you let's say you blow out of here on a Thursday, you're up in Georgia on a Friday. So it's Friday, Saturday, you're driving all over the place and then up until about noon on Sunday, and then you split and you head home. And that's a nice, comfortable weekend. And the deal is here is some of them, everything's all inclusive. You know, you sign up and you get the hotels, you get the restaurants, you get if there's a drive time on a racetrack like Atlanta Motorsports Raceway or at Lake Lanier Raceway or something like that, that's all included. And the only thing you really have to pay for is gas and, you know, a few tips here and there and some food, you know. And then, of course, you know, that's like on your day. They always give you like a free day or something like that or some free time. And so that's a lot of fun. But this other one that seems kind of interesting, I'm looking forward to checking it out. It's basically the guy puts together the group. Okay, so you got maybe 30, 40, 50 cars even, okay? And they break you up into groups of 10, you know, 8 to 10 cars. And they say, look, you can either do the route, you can do the walkie-talkie with and follow the leader. If you want to go with a fast crowd, you can do that. And if you want to go with a really fast, irresponsible crowd, which my hand's up for that, then you can kind of like, if you get there, you're either there at chow time or you're at the Beige Bar Hotel, one of the two. And so you have a lot of fun. And so that one, it sounds like it's a lot of fun because basically what we do is we meet in the morning and, you know, the guys generally can't wait to get in the cars and get going. And it's just driving. And it's when you're on a racetrack, you're racing and you really have to kind of stay focused. Your competitive juices get going. And even though you really just want to kind of find someone that you can kind of race with and kind of hang out with, you don't necessarily do that because if you have that instinct, you want to race and you try, you know, and you push it. And it's not really relaxing. You're focused and you've got a goal in mind and you're trying to get it done. When you go on these driving tours, you basically find somebody else that's kind of like, you know, you're in a group with about five guys that kind of like drive fast, but yet they're responsible. Or you're with some crazy guys that drive really, really, really fast and take chances. Yeah, it's fine. Or you can lollygag and stay at the back of the pack and just kind of like tool and actually go the speed limit. And so, you know, you have that option. And but because at the beginning of the day, you're hanging out, you're having breakfast. At lunchtime, you're talking about your drive. You're hanging out with your buds, your new friends, okay? And then in the evening, you're hanging out with your new friends again and some more new people that you met. And you're talking car stuff and, you know, whatever else. And everybody's having a good time. And then you go crash. And then you get up in the morning and you do that 2 days in a row. And it's just like it's therapy. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And it's a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to checking this one out. Now, this group does this probably 4 or 5 times a year. I know they got one coming up in June, and then they've got one coming up in the fall. And that sounds like a lot of fun. So basically, I think it starts on the Tennessee side of the Dragon, okay, which is North Carolina, right next to Tennessee there. So it's not too far from, I think, Knoxville. So then they kind of meet and go for it. Now, the good thing is that, you know, if you know in advance when you're going to do this tour, so let's just say, for example, you do the October one, there's, you know, plenty of hotels there. You don't have to stay in the Wyndham, necessarily, or the Taj Mahal, the Hilton, or something like that. You can stay at a Hamper Inn, a Red Roof Inn, or something like that, you know, whatever your budget allows. So you have that option as well, which is kind of nice, you know. So when you really want to do these events is like in the spring when the weather's really kind of cool, or in the fall, which is a lot of fun up there because you get the changing of the leaves and fall colors, everything like that. So it's pretty neat. It's just kind of like a change, you know, from Florida. Again, like I said, it's therapy. Did I go on and ramble like I normally do? I guess I did. The most important thing that I can say is have a car. It doesn't have to be a new car. It can be an older car. It can be an old Jaguar. It can be an old Mustang. It can be an old Camaro. It just has to be good mechanically. In fact, I'm going to give you another example. I'm going to change the tone here totally. I'm going to go with the Power Tour, for example. So you get the Hot Rod Power Tour. So wherever they start, let's just say it's someplace in the United States, could be, you know, Detroit. It could be San Francisco. It could be New York. It could be Chicago. And then wherever they end, okay, let's just say they end in Bowling Green, Kentucky, okay, at the Corvette Museum or the old Corvette Museum. All right, so then the next year it starts there and then they go someplace else. And it's like a 3-4-day event. It's just like the Great Race. They used to do the Great Race, which I think Corky Coker was involved in that. That was the same thing. It would be like a 4-5-day or 6-day event and they would pick up where they left off the following year. So if it ended up in Florida, they might go up to New England. If it ends up in New England, they might go over to Wisconsin. If it ends up in Wisconsin, they might might drive down to, you know, to Tulsa, Oklahoma, because there's a drag strip down there. Wherever they go along the way, there's always some drag strip, road race track, or something like that where people can get a little track time. But again, the Power Tour is another example of that. And you got some pretty serious cars out there. I mean, some of these cars are geared pretty low, and they're serious race cars or street cars. And the good thing about the Power Tour is they have support vehicles that always stay with the group. So if you do break down or something happens, there's always somebody there. Some of these tours have these driving tours also provide that too. Like when you go with the Mustang Club or the Porsche Club or the BMW Club or something like that, you're close by. I'm going to look into those a little bit more and more. And as I hopefully participate in one or two of those, I'll let you know, because we might want to put together our own nostalgic radio and cars / Gulfstream Motorsports driving tour. You know, basically you're from here to, let's just say it starts near Road Atlanta. Road Atlanta, if you drive from here, let's say Clearwater to Lake Lanier and that area, Gainesville, it's probably a 9.5 hour drive, okay? And I would like to say, let's all meet in Valdosta and take all the back roads and work our way up there, which that's possible too. The problem is there's not really, you have to go more towards the center of the state. Well, when I say center of the state, from 75 over towards I-95 in the middle there and go up, and I believe it's Augusta. You go up that way. There's a lot of windy roads up that way too. So you don't have to go I-75. And I just did I-75, and I was laughing when I was on my way up there, because I've been going to I-75 in Atlanta since 1973. And the whole time I was up there, every year, every time I drove up I-75, as soon as I got to across the Georgia-Florida border line, state line there, I-75 was under construction. You know, two lanes, fix it. Three lanes, fix it. Partially two lanes, partially three lanes. Well, this is the first time I actually drove from here to Atlanta with no construction on the road on I-75. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it. But then when I got into Atlanta and I got on either 285, something else, 85, and around the thing. I mean, the roads were absolutely horrendous up there. I mean, they're crazy. And they drive fast, and they're crazy fast. So you definitely don't want to do that. But the thing is that, you know, just south of Atlanta, catch 85 and head on up over to Gainesville, and then let the games begin. It's a lot of fun. Well, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars this evening. Don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network, where you can hear some of the best conversations with some of the most legendary and fascinating names in motorsports and in music. Don't forget to check out some of these driving tours. I think they're going to be a lot of fun. Don't forget to check out flacarshows.com. We can find out where all the car shows are taking place here in Florida. So I hope to see you guys on the road soon. And meantime, I want everybody to stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.